Okay, we'll call the committee to order and, we've got tentative draft three before us, and during the Saturday meeting, why there was, the staff was to promulgate appropriate amendments for inclusion in a tentative draft three for costs, revenues, and impact. And you'll notice the aspect stamped subsections are the ones where they've done this. So Mr. Lane has been good enough to join us. He couldn't have come at three, so that's why we moved it back. And
what are you doing, Leonard? It's so important.
No, your colleagues over in the Senate are doing the same thing you've had me doing.
Oh, I was trying to figure out what you were doing every day. And,
okay, we'll just turn it over then to staff and Mr. Leonard Lane for explanation on page three, parent F, G.
Sorry, page five. Yeah, the changes
five.
We made are noted with an asterisk, and they start, I think, on page five, F. Now, we were asked we decided to define impact as social, economic, and environmental impact. And it's supposed to be analyzed, let's turn back to 240B.
What page is that?
That's page four. And it says generally that the initial overall development plan shall include, but need not be limited to, the following elements. Now, the impact is supposed to address itself at least to those elements in terms of social, economic, and environmental impact. But for both the Matsu Borough and the City and Borough of Juneau. Oh, yeah, one other point. We said in accordance with generally accepted standards for these procedures, rather than list the standards or what we mean by impact, we thought it would better to leave it open. Now, I think there are standards in the federal environmental impact statement.
You've got 10 years of standards on how they do those and all that stuff. So rather than list all of the standards down, they have a generally accepted set of them that everyone that does these needs to address, and let's address them all.
Dave, I think the city board paper that you have on your desk would give you kind of a rough idea of what guidelines they follow, because our opinion was made up on the basis of those factors which were not going to be necessary requirements.
Okay, why don't you point that out to me afterwards? The question is whether we want to go any further than we've gone, basically. I'm not sure it's necessary. It's a committee's decision. Okay, can we keep going? All right, G. Now, G is the cost analysis section. Now, we've incorporated in this section all the costs that I listed for you on my memorandum for Saturday into this section. In addition, we've added a section here which says, and this is on page six, 6 lines down, the commission shall also assess the cost of supporting that portion of the City and Borough of Juneau's existing bonded indebtedness as affected by the move. This is to accommodate Mr. McGinnis's comments on Saturday. I think those are the only changes. Oh yeah, one other change. The bottom of that paragraph, starting with during the fiscal year 1980, the state shall also provide funding for an economic diversification study in an effort to determine viable alternatives for the economic future of the City and Borough of Juneau. The study shall be completed on or before 1980. That's designed to figure out ways to plug in the holes created by the move, the economic holes. Next change, page 7, under section K, the paragraph under 3, which shouldn't be there, it should be up above K, but it starts with the commission shall, near the bottom of the page above funding, shall also investigate and recommend to the legislature alternatives for the housing and attendant support facilities to be provided by the private sector for those involved in the initial development. In other words, how do you house people when they move? House and take care of them. And that should be considered by the commission. I think that covers it. Leonard, do you know if we did anything else?
You know, the one point that you just brought up that we didn't put in was that one section on the offsetting the cost for the sale and release of land.
Right. Now, right. If you have the House Bill 178 near you, let's see, Section 250, Subsection 3.
It would just be added to G.
It would, yeah. It's page 6, the last sentence. It's page 6, 3. And it says, an analysis of the merits of disposal by sale or lease of state land in the community for residential, commercial, and other general purposes.
What? You just lost me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. After 178, listen to this sentence and we'll plug this sentence into our tentative draft. Analysis of the merits of disposal by sale or lease of state land in the community for residential, commercial, and other general purposes. The issue of how you deal with that land, how you gonna.
I thought that was already in.
It got dropped out in the typing.
It got lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
Well, no.
Do you see it there, Ed?
Just a moment ago,
here it goes right there.
I thought you just read it here a moment ago and talked. Maybe I missed it. Well, maybe I didn't.
I have one further comment just off the top of my head. We keep getting into trouble with the timing, with a two-tiered approach, in that all the things listed in 240A through whatever it is, G, H, I, J, K, where some of those things I think should be considered in the initial plan, so that people, when they're voting in 78, if they vote, can see what the commission's done. Now, it doesn't really say that in this bill. And I guess the policy decision the committee has to make is whether or not things like D, which is the reorganization and regionalization of state governmental agencies, should be specifically mandated within the initial study. It's assumed it'll be done, but we may want to be more specific about it, locking it into the 78 date.
Now, that's the one that was in your bill, wasn't it?
In the
178. That was in two bills, wasn't it?
Yeah, the regionalization was in 170.
Yeah, and it's just a question of when you want to force the commission to present the report, or at least whether you can wait till the next. I don't think you can wait on any of these. It may just be a stylistic drafting problem, but the question is, do you want me to lock it in more clearly that it should be considered in 78?
Can
you not do it?
Yeah, it's physically possible. It's physically possible. We costed it out that they can put on the number of people it takes to do that, which is one more element in that task. It's obviously easier to get it, to stretch it out for the year. On the other hand, I don't think it's that difficult. You go to the 15 departments and you say, give us a plan to regionalize yourself. And each department draws up a plan, then you sit down with each commissioner, go over that plan, run it through the governor's office, and present it back here to the legislature and see if it makes sense. I would think it's probably like, three people or four people working full-time for a month, say 4 man months, could probably get that done.
Doesn't SB 81 treat that
problem? No. All 81 does is does the geotechnical work.
Wasn't there also a coordinator in the office of the governor wasn't that the last clause of that?
So the 30,000 for a coordinator for the rest of this fiscal year. But that wouldn't...
It's not the same
thing. It's not the same thing. This just takes a consulting firm, Tim. They'll put, like I say, 3 to 4 people on it full time. It'll take like 4 man months or so. And they'll have a draft to give to the commission.
We're already regionalized, aren't we?
Somewhat. Yeah, somewhat. It depends by the, it goes by department. But nobody's formalized that yet.
They've never formalized it, but there's more state employees in Fairbanks and Anchorage in each one of those towns than there is in each southeastern, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's why I say it's not that hard to do. In a way, it just kind of codifies what we already have and adds the administrative capability.
That's the part that's changed.
Okay, what's the sense of the committee then? All of, every one of these except were specifically set aside as a different date for like the diversification study fiscal year 1980. Everything else should be provided by 1978.
What's happening, it seems to me, is that everything, just about everything has to be provided by 78. 79 is like a slack date for to tidy it up a little bit. But it's looking like...
How are you going to make any decisions in 78 unless you've done that?
Well, that's...
There's going to be some pertinent decisions made relative to D in 78 that you can't make in some of the others unless you make that one, can you?
That's exactly right. There's no choice, I think. If you're going to be thorough, there's no choice.
Wish you were here. We got a motion to put 37 back in the day.
Well, are we getting away from the rationale of providing a lot of this a lot of this info in a finalized form in 79?
No, I think we're going to start putting more preliminary info in 78. That's what we're
Yeah. The thing is, it seems to me that, like Ed said, like others, if you have to do it. You have to give them an idea by 78. You have to think of everything, at least preliminarily. And what we're trying to do with the 79 date is just give them a chance to reconsider and tighten it up. That's what we're doing. That's the direction.
Look on page 4, section D. Page 4, section D, we're talking about specifying if that work was done by 78. There's no specification.
Boy, I don't know. All of a sudden, the draft included a whole bunch of stuff, didn't it?
I'll read over the page 5 and page 6. They were the ones with the asterisks. That's where they tried to plug in the cost and that. Revenue and impact. There was language left out regarding the recommendation on the disposition of land that will be plugged in. We'll read that again from language 178.
Oh, you want me to do that? Okay.
Just give Tim a
okay.
Thing. Here's what I'm going to do because we got two guys. And Ed, do you know when Chris is excused from the call the whole week?
I guess so. It was all news to me. I haven't seen him in a week or so. I don't know what his plans are.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to go any farther until we get everybody, you know, to look at this. And
I did hear that I think Aaron told me this morning that those gas contracts came up that they might ask him to come back and vote on. And that could be tomorrow or the next day, so he could be back.
What happened to the
suggestions by Kelly to plug in conceptually on the revenue? Okay, that was left out. Now read the language from 178 that we'll plug in for them.
We just forgot to plug that sentence in. We worked on it Saturday.
Here's the land sentence. Analysis of the merits of disposal by sale or lease of state land in the community for residential, commercial, and other general purposes. I always want to get in the concept that they've got to figure out what to do with the land, how to dispose
of it. That's one thing, that we should have projected revenue.
Yeah, well, that's the thing we left out.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, what was the sentence? Do you remember, Lenny?
Yeah.
This is
the 178 language I gave you the complete sentence. you know, to the, the commission shall study.
Yeah.
The merits of, and comma, and potential revenue to be gained therefrom. And then you go on to the disposal by the sale or lease of state land in the community.
Now, if we understand it, you worded that in such a way as that once that study's done, then the alternatives to disposal of that land will reflect what kind of revenue you would project.
That's right, that's why we said the revenue.
Those alternatives. All right.
Tim, Mr. Kelly, I apologize for having not picked up that study in our draft.
Yeah, I'm sort of waiting for people to review whatever they might want to review and pose questions or inquiries or objections.
You pointed out that.
Bill.
Page 6, middle of the page. Is during FY80, the state shall provide funding for economic diversification study. We completed that before July 1, 80. Well, FY80 begins July 1 of 79.
Yep.
That means the study won't get funded till calendar, first part of the earliest, the first part of 1980. Does that give enough time to complete that study? I mean, if it's going to be anything more than a quickie, we should probably provide that funding in FY79.
We provide it in. We want to start. Yeah, the funding is to be provided during the FY, is to be provided during FY79 to start July 1, 1980.
That's not what it says.
We've got the year wrong in here.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we've talked about that and we decided 80, but then the question is.
Let's say that's the first matter of business in FY80. That's January of 1980. It zips through. It still only gives them to July to put that study together.
Yeah, we've got the fiscal year wrong to start it with.
Yeah.
79.
Should be 79.
What date did you change? Where it said 1980?
Yeah.
We 79.
Middle of page 6. Yeah.
What did you mean there in the sentence above that final cost analysis and financing alternatives for the overall development plan of an entire capital city? Now, how would you come up with the financing alternatives without having the, how would you project those without the lease and sale of the land? Now, I think that's what I saw earlier that made me think that was in
the lease or the sale study is already completed. It's a completed. Previous to that, and then you come up with funding. They'll have to pick out which set of alternatives, or they'll present to the legislature the set of alternatives that look the best, and the legislature will pick out the ones that they want. Which also reverts back to the type of development entity that you decide on. And you're going to decide who's going to have the power up there. Is it going to be the state? Are you going to set up a local council? What are you going to do?
Why are we doing this funding? I think Tim might have brought this up, the funding for an economic diversification study on the part of Juneau.
Because it's going to lessen the impact costs, the diversification costs.
Wasn't a good thing. Say this was sort of gratuitous. What I'd ask for was a transition plan to deal with the specific impacts. But what we have obviously is in response to some of the talk around the table that day that Juneau was, as an economic matter, going to have trouble. So I'm very happy to see it in there, but it wasn't really the report. request that I make.
Well, we had an analysis. We kind of went around what that transition plan meant, and the result of the economist thinking was that it was really what you really want is not something as limited as you had. You want to have a diversification plan, and that was brought back to us a year ago when we had that symposium up in Anchorage, and they said, look, you're taking something away from there. Clearly, it's going to be an obligation of the state to take a look at, based once that's happened, what can they do to lessen the impact in that area. So pulling from that, I think it's more appropriate to do a diversification study. Yes, you got more than you asked for. You can thank us for that.
Thank you.
Good-hearted people.
Well, Leonard, in this, Mr. Chairman, Leonard, in this studying in purple, we talk about regionalization. Is there any, at this time, any constraints at all on these going over to these departments and telling them to sit down and decide what they'd like to move? And then later have us decide whether we like that or not.
I don't think there's any constraints at all. As far as from, you've worked in the bureaucracy longer than I have, and I guess if the legislature said, first step is we want from each of the departments what you're going to move, and we want it back here by X date, I suppose they'd respond to it.
Yeah, you move one judge, that means an $8 million courthouse. You know, they go on and on with this, and I just,
that's the law library.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe there's nothing we can do about letting those people plan their own regionalization. I think you meant it's going to be reviewed by the governor, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There was some caution in there as to not, when we talk about regionalization, that the minimum amount of move that would be necessary to affect the regionalization.
I would think, based on the procedures up there now, that'll be put together, and I'll sit down with the budget review committee, and I'll go down by budget component. At least if I was sitting up there, that's what I'd recommend they do. So you can see what in fact would go and how that affects each budget request.
There'd have to be some justification for moving or changing. Most of you're going to find most of that's going to be in top management, isn't it?
Well, the initial move, yes, it's all top management with the exception of the legislature.
Yeah, all right, we can keep it to that.
Well, I understood it yesterday afternoon, but I'm confused now on that fiscal year, this economic diversification number.
Mm.
God, I had a great rationale too.
Yeah, that's
why we wanted to do that. What was that rationale?
Right, you said the fiscal year begins July 1, 1970. Fiscal year 80 begins July 1, 1979, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And July 1, 1980 is 1 year later. And so you felt all they needed was 1 year to do it.
They're not getting the year because we'll be out of session by July 1, 1979. We don't go into session until January 80 when we can act on it.
Well, you want the funding cycle to begin. Our rationale is the funding cycle is the consultant has the money to do the project beginning July 1, 1979.
Right. Well, then we got to
fund it.
We got to back that up to fiscal 1979.
That's what we did.
There's no way around
during
it.
During fiscal year 79. Okay. Mm-hmm. And our rationale yesterday was that they do it that year, and the reason you do it that year is by that point in time, you already know whether or not that thing is going to move or not. I mean, at this stage, at that point, whatever is going to happen in 78 would have happened, and that'll, you know, at that point it'll be up or down. If it's down, then you don't worry about it. If it's up, then you know what's going to go, and you already have the relocation phase in plan, so you know where the holes are. Then you do the economic diversification study to figure out where to plug them in, rather than spend the money early, which at that point would probably be a week.
Yeah, I agree. 79 is a point of no return.
Yeah, at that point you're there. If it's going to go, that's when you do your diversification study. That's also when you calculate the thing on the bond issue and everything else, or you calculate the supporting.
And
of the
that
bond
decision will be made
so
from this from the new phase one, anyway.
All right.
Yeah. So then there'd be a lot of objectivity or subjectivity based on guilt or whatever.
On page 6, line 6, the commission shall also assess the cost of supporting that portion of the city and borough of Juneau's existing bonded indebtedness as affected by the move. I think that goes too far.
That's age?
That's right here.
Oh, yeah.
Now, are we saying that the state is going to pick up the borough, the bond indebtedness of the city of borough, of the borough of Juneau?
We're saying that going to look into it.
Just going to look into it.
No, we don't pick up the bond indebtedness. What we do is, there is, because of the move, you're going to lose some people. And based the bond indebtedness, you have a certain mill rate that supports a certain level of bond indebtedness. And that that mill rate is pretty well, at this stage of the game, determined, and so many people contribute to that mill rate. So if you pulled, for example, 500 people out, or 1,000 people out from the city and borough of Juneau, the amount to the bonded indebtedness that those 1,000 people contribute is the amount the state could obligate itself to, and only that amount for the life of those bonds at that date.
Wait a minute now, if we're talking mill rate, we're not talking people, we're talking property assessment.
I know it, but you're saying you have 1,000 people less. You want to do two things. You want to take care of the bond rating and stabilize the mill rate. As I had explained to me yesterday, what you do is you take the total amount of bond indebtedness. Let me just use a round number. Say you have $10 million in bond indebtedness, and that's supported by 20,000 people. And you've got a mill rate that's across 20,000 people.
You can't ban women, children.
However they count
transients.
That. I'm not sure how they count that. There's some, the economists say that there's some way to get a hard number on that. If you pull 1,000 people away that are paying taxes or that have their property assessed, then the amount of money those people contribute toward the paying off of that bonded indebtedness, or at least they contribute toward the mill rate, and let me say that that's $100,000. That's the amount that the state has to obligate itself to for the life of the bonds that are in, that have been voted on by those people that are already here. And that's what they mean. That would stabilize the mill rate and pick up just that portion of the bond indebtedness of the city and borough of Juneau that is being supported by the people the state pulled out.
We could have done that on the pipeline impacts and all those other things. They never figured that thing.
Maybe you can answer.
I'm not an economist. That's the principle, and that's what they tell me. They can calculate a hard number on.
Okay. Those people will be leaving, and the assumption is that, I guess the state will take over the property because under indemnification, because nobody's going to buy it.
We don't know that.
Somebody's going to buy that, aren't
they? In some form or another, the state, they can't get 95% of their, at least 95% of their assessed value plus the increase due to inflation based on that indicator for Anchorage. Then the state picks up the difference, I guess, between what they can get and what it should be, okay? Now, the state picks that up. I don't know what the bill says about ownership of the thing. I suppose if nobody bought the house at all, the state could end up with a house, which it would then put on the auction block for, in one form or another, under its Uniform Disposal of Property Act or whatever we've got.
My thought was that somebody is going to own the property.
That's correct.
And somebody will pay taxes on it.
Yeah.
I think all they're going to do is investigate whether that's necessary. I think that's all this says.
I think that's what all you guys asked for, was to look for a way to either
it may or may not
save the bond rating and stabilize the mill rate, and that's the way you do it. So they'll take a look at that, and based on the relocation phasing assumptions, we'll say what may or may not be necessary. The number you get will be a calculated number, and it may show it doesn't have an effect on the rating, or it does have an effect on the rating.
Yeah, but this doesn't lock us into buying that.
No, it just locks it into investigating.
I think you can come up with a better sentence than that.
Yeah, the sentence kind of
shall assess the cost.
But, you know, to the informed, it would appear that, you know, we're going to
shall investigate the cost,
out of bonds form,
which may be affected by the move. That way we take
care. How about if we use the word bond rating? That's what we're talking about, right?
No, we're not talking about a bond rating. We're talking about a mill level, isn't it? Aren't we, Tim?
Well, the bond rating would affect the mill level. The bond rating really went way down, then the mill level would go up because the bonds would be more expensive and might have to be refloated.
How about investigate the possibility of supporting?
Only on existing bonds. You don't do anything about the new bonds.
Right.
But you're talking about supporting that existing level, mm-hmm. and that affects the mill. That's how you stabilize the mill rate.
Also, on some of their long-term projects, they probably have series out, and they're halfway through the series for one project as it's kind of continuing.
Well, that would be part of the existing.
Yeah.
What is the bonded indebtedness in the borough of Juneau?
Don't know.
No
Okay, read your line.
All right, the commission shall also investigate the possibility of supporting that portion of the city and borough of Juneau's existing bond of indebtedness which may be affected by the move.
Say it again, slow.
The commission shall also investigate the possibility of supporting...
How about the cost and possibility?
Possible cost of supporting that portion of the city and borough of Juneau's existed bonded indebtedness which may be affected by the move. Commission shall also investigate the possible costs of supporting that portion of the city and borough of Juneau's existing bonded indebtedness which may be affected by the move.
We haven't changed that sentence very much at all. By that language.
Well, it certainly doesn't lock in anything. It's pretty.
The only people we want to lock in those guys to investigating it, but that's it. See, we have to take for the commission's point. We have to tell them you shall, not simply that you may, because then they'll have to get into a great policy thing and debate it 90 days whether we were really serious about that or.
Well, then how about something like the commission shall investigate the effect on the bonded indebtedness on the city and borough of Juneau by the capital work, by the move.
Yeah. Isn't that what we were saying?
Well, I don't think we have to say cost.
You don't like the idea of supporting, right? The idea that the sentence says you might have to pay the tab. And it doesn't say that, but it leaves that as a possibility.
Here's the point, see? I'm not so sure that there's going to be a heavy tab on this thing. Now, if there's a heavy tab, the state has an obligation. I'm willing to accept that. But I'm not so sure there is going to be a heavy tab. And to put this sentence in there indicates, oh, yeah, there's going to be a tab there somewhere, and we better figure out how much it's going to cost. Well, there might be a tab, and there might not be. You know, I'm under the impression that Juneau's going to survive, you know, if and when the capital moves, Juneau's going to survive at this time. You know, I might be wrong, but I don't think we're going to have any of these heavy-duty property property
damage. This only anticipates the problem. It doesn't pose a solution, you know. But maybe you're right. Maybe you want to redraft it so there's no... I think what bothers you is the language to cost of supporting.
And
we can probably drop that and say the same thing.
I mean, let's see, first of all, if there's going to be a problem. Let's investigate the problem. Is there going to be a problem? Let's find out if there's going to be a problem. If we're going to support it, that's down the road somewhere. But let's find out if there's going to be a problem first.
Yeah, well, that's the intent, whether it appears to make that presumption is read in.
The commission shall also investigate the possible cost, if any, of supporting.
I don't know why we're hung up on this.
Send the words. Possibly.
Because if they find that there is such a cost,
Miles,
and overall,
how about the possible effects?
The commission shall investigate the effect of capital relocation on the bonded indebtedness of the city of Borough of Juneau.
Okay.
That's great. I think that's what you suggested. That committee's doing.
I've got a small problem on page 8. The 270 report. This report should be distributed to the governor, presiding officer of the legislature. I'd like to put all members of the legislature. I'd like to know what's going on. I'd like a copy of the report.
Okay, they would, but that's fine.
All members?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
statute.
Yeah, well, it's easy to say, the difference between 30 years and 80 years is a long time.
Yeah, but each one of those buildings is only, is time limited in terms of operation, maintenance, and personnel costs.
What's the time limitation on this building?
I wonder, can we establish a limitation ourselves, or is that Public Works?
That's Public Works.
Problem, only they, we can't.
The other thing though, about the U.S. Office of Chairman, another hearing, is that the problem of the commission and the legislature working with this consulting entity, you're basically going to put a large consulting firm with a lot of different components to work here in May or so, and you're going to ask them to perform a near Herculean task to get everything done by February. Now, in most cases, a committee tends to slow the process down a little bit, because you have to stop every so often and get a sign-off by the committee. What you tend to have happening very often is the committee signing off on a portion and rubber stamping the rest. And so really the executive director is going to have to be probably a very excellent person in human relations and conflict resolution to work out all of the pieces to make sure the committee is on board for the whole thing. And you have the other problem with the legislature trying to keep up with this process too. Saying, as opposed to you getting the plan dropped on you in February and you say, here it is, folks. You know, something that's this thick with some appropriate briefings in advance, obviously. But the only thing I want to caution you is that we need to make certain in our process, especially probably in our funding or in our letter of intent to the interim committee set up by the legislature, that somewhere along the line you make sure that you keep them abreast of the process so that it doesn't come down on you in February with the fact that, well, we never knew what was going on, even though it would probably be well publicized. I just want to keep that in front of you, because you are going to have to make a lot of decisions next session relating to something that is fairly technical in its own content.
Well, what's your suggestion then? I mean,
well, I'm suggesting a couple things. The first thing I'm suggesting is in the selection of the committee, obviously, I think the governor's going to need to be careful that he gets people that understand what they're getting into, that they know that it's a fast process, and they're going to have to devote the time and effort to it so it doesn't run away from them. Because you're going to be meeting almost every other week making decisions that relates to the time frames of the project. Secondly, it may not be such a bad idea to have an interim committee of the legislature set up to be kept abreast or apprised of the progress being made by the Capital Planning Commission. And I just do that to answer your question of something can be dropped on you and you say, God, we disagree with it completely. On the other hand, you've got the committee, you don't want to influence what that group does, but you sure want somebody in the legislature to be appraised of this as it goes on.
I don't even mind influencing them a little bit. It's our decision, you know.
Well, what I was thinking,
it's not on a daily basis.
Yeah, what I was thinking of is they keep coming into problems of intent. And we've tried to draft into this bill, and I'm really pleased with the stuff that's here. There's not all the questions we had. I mean, a lot of it's right now, we want you to do that. We went back trying to find out what people meant when the initiative was drafted, you know, and you end up being all over the map. This time, the people on this committee, as well as some of the others on the Senate side and state affairs, know what the intent is behind those phrases. And when there's a question of what intent is, they can come to you and they say, what do you mean? And you can say, this is what we meant. Okay, then they can proceed. And not have in that great period of time to make some decisions that may not correspond with your intent. So that's really what I offer in terms of keeping the process going.
You know, I wonder if it'd be helpful. What concerns me too is a clause in here that somewhere it protects the commissioner, at least the planners and stuff, and we're all concerned about figures getting out prematurely and being batted around. If we should have some section in here that says that none of these figures are the results of any studies as promulgated by this statute can be released without the consent of the commission or something. I just wonder if people are going to run up here every day and find out that you finished one phase, and that's what it's going to cost, the indemnification, or it's going to cost this, and then you see that figure in the Times tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to happen anyway, you know.
And I think we'd be pretty hard-pressed under current law to...
I think you're better just keeping the whole thing open, keep the proceedings like right out there. Understand they're going to bandy the numbers around. I mean, the Times is going to come up with one, the group down here is going to come up with one, they're going to pick out whatever they want, they're going to throw them all over the headlines. And it's just going to kind of be up to that commission and its executive director and staff to make sure that when numbers come out, they're appropriately qualified. They never will be qualified enough. And then when the final thing is finished, you know, they come out and they say, here it is. It's hard to do it any other way, because we tried to keep some of those numbers, everything intact until the end. Well, that's really tough, because you turn around to a reporter and, you know, they come to a meeting and they say, we want to see your numbers, and you take your briefcase and you stick it underneath your arm. You know, I can appreciate what you're saying to try to keep the electorate less confused, but I think you just have to keep the process open all the way along the line. It's a toughie, though.
Okay, are there any more concerns on this tentative draft 3? Clarifications?
I have one. Putting in this Supreme Court Justice. This is already a suit, a future suit. How is the Supreme Court Justice going to decide anything that's already a future suit?
Well, he's just going to be given a copy, I guess, as a pro forma type move.
Is this
to turn over the studies to all members of the legislature, the governor, and, you know, various.
I really feel that this is something.
Yeah, where was that on page 8? Yeah, if it's a future suit, somebody better get on with it.
I'm on with it right now. Right sitting here.
Where was it? What for?
Right here, page 8, section 270. Reports.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that sort of a courtesy?
Yeah, it's just a perfunctory number. Because I'm the general public, so anybody can get a copy of it. It's just he's just the head of the judiciary. That's all. It's just a perfunctory, pro forma type.
Do you understand
number.
That?
No, I really feel this should be out. Maybe the administrator should get a copy, but not the Chief Justice. I really don't feel the administrator of the court could do the business, you know, and bring it to the attention. But when you get to the Chief Justice, this is bringing it to his attention, and this is something you should keep completely out of his mind, because he may have to decide the matter, you see.
Okay, any
I know
other
chief justices every 3 years, but the administrator of the court is the one to get any information for the court.
I think for all practical matters, that's where it'll go in the first place.
Sure, sure.
I think it's just a matter of title. I think that's where it will go, to Mr. Snowden.
Okay, any other questions, considerations, observations? Okay, what is the... what do you guys or the committee feel about an interim committee then? And this wasn't a setup. I hadn't, you know, asked him to do anything, but since the guy brought it up. Now,
would it be the joint State House, State Affairs Committee acting as an interim committee?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like this committee to have, I'd like to have some sort of interim committee jurisdiction, I hadn't necessarily thought about monitoring this, but just working on some other things, like maybe we'll get around to amending Miller's bill or the governor's 93 on that DOT if it goes into effect, and you know, this year maybe we won't, on lobby maybe we will and maybe we won't on that. On unicameralism, on sunset laws. Some of these things we're not going to get to, and some we will. Okay.
How did you plan on tying that, Mr. Chairman, into this? Did you say you thought we ought to have an interim committee of some kind?
I was just thinking of just talking it around, and you guys can think about it. And I'll talk informally with the speaker, and then maybe send a memo based on some sort of consensus here.
You're not talking about serving on this commission or anything. You're just talking about it to kind of stay on top of these things.
Yeah, let it take care of. I think it's going to be a middle ground that everybody could agree on. Because Bob and I both think that there should be legislative participation. Mm-hmm. You guys don't want the commission influenced in any way. So.
On the other hand, then you'd have to take a look at the makeup of the proposed committee, unless it was a standing committee right now, where there'd be no doubt as to how the committee was selected.
Yeah, generally you don't. You generally don't do standing committees for the interim. But certainly, if it was an interim committee signed off by council. See, the funding is the prerogatives of council, you know, of legislative council, because generally those interim committees are the guys who didn't become chairman, something like that, so it's their little thing. And they've been sort of historically jealous of appropriating any money to standing committees, because then, you know, that's one interim committee that can't cook around.
It's a big game.
Yeah. I don't know. I just thought I'd...
What do you suggest?
Well, I don't know that I've suggested anything.
Oh, you just, are you?
Yeah.
No, I mean, you gonna kick it around a little more?
Yeah.
I don't think we've agreed to anything. Right?
No.
Okay.
No, except a certain concern. Obviously, if it was a certified interim committee, there'd be representation by the minority. And if it was these committees, then the representation of the minority is already guaranteed anyway. It's already locked in. But I just thought I'd throw that out because I hadn't.
I don't think on some of these kind of committees, you know, in this oversight stuff, that party business should enter into it, where, you know, you get four and one and all that stuff on some of these.
Yeah. If we did some sort of interim committee, but the only I guess what I was saying is I'd like it broader. I'd like it to have jurisdiction over, you know, over oversight and review of this capital move commission, but I'd also like it to be broader so that those things that are...
As if it's a state affairs oriented.
So
the joint state affairs committee had got three co-chairmen. It would be a first in legislative history.
Three co-chairmen.
Why don't we just have a meeting? I mean, leave it like it is.
The state affairs committee
just meets every so often.
Yeah, we could do that.
The problem with that is, like Bob said, you get into prerogatives of council.
Yeah.
And
but anyway, that's I'll kick it around with Malone. I'll kick it around with Miller, and just see what their reactions are and stuff like that. I just thought I'd bring it up. Okay. Anything else? Everybody's pretty well satisfied.
There's nothing I can do about them now. I have to think about them.
When are we going to get to an ultimate draft that we can look at and come to the point of voting it up or down?
When everybody else gets back here. I'm very, very hesitant to, you know, without the six members here, particularly Representative Lathain. Because I'd like to, you know, keep this...
Well, we're obviously going to have a tentative draft 4.
Yeah.
Right.
When do the tentative drafts stop?
Well, we're getting... As soon as your comments stop, so will the drafts. And at that point, then I'll take it and I'll tighten it up, you know, make it look nice upstairs.
Yeah, well that's and then point where we want to read the whole thing and see
right,
what we've done
exactly.
Because we've patchworked it, you know, and there's...
Yeah.
At least, you know, I want to take a night and spend 3 or 4 hours... getting it all straight.
Okay, let's do it this way. We'll get a tentative draft 4 to you guys in your boxes by tomorrow at committee time or earlier. And it's not in your box by 1:15, why then it'll be submitted to you here. And you'll have up until through Friday to review it and make comments on it.
Okay, that's good.
And I'll try to touch base with you guys informally, and we'll hope to do it. We'll hope to be making, you know, the final bottom line decisions early next week, because I'm presuming Lathain is going to be out of town the whole week.
Okay.
You know, we're going to have to cook on this thing a little bit because we're running out of time. We want to confirm the member of the commission this session.
Well, that's right, but
I would like to say that we better just get this thing passed through the House next week and get it over the Senate, because we can't count on being here any longer than 90 days.
Well, if we get this to finance next week, it might be through the House by about the 80th day.
It's not over.
Yeah, we can't determine anything. And I don't want to make any, I mean, I've got some, I don't know what the reasons are for certain absences. Yeah. And so, but anyway.
As long as we get four anyway, people, anyway. Hey,
yeah, okay. All right, so then starting tomorrow, then we'll go on everything. We'll put out a calendar this afternoon, get it to you in your box, and then we'll start dealing with other important matters of state. Absent the caption.
During tomorrow?
Yeah.
If you've got thoughts, don't hesitate to grab me and just talk about
it. Yeah, really, you know.
I'm available, you know, if you just want to talk.
My name is Carolyn Berg.
You got to speak up before I gamble it down.
Are we paying again?
What's the date today again? The date today is February 28th, 1977. Any remarks I made are not voluntary remarks, but involuntary remarks. Any suggestions I make are involuntary. I am making an involuntary appearance just to hold the rights, because we are having a future suit on the Capitol move. I have looked for counsel and have not been able to find counsel. So I am trying to do this on my own with other concerns, other national and state concerns. Thank you.
Read it this way, but don't read this.
Okay, we'll call the committee to order, and we have a quorum. We're going to take up state affairs. We're going to take up House Bill 19, preferential presidential primary. We had a subcommittee out. Who's the chairman of that?
Sort of a floating chairmanship.
Yeah. Al was the chairman. Okay. And had Miles and Kelly on it too.
What's that one on?
Joe and myself.
Oh, okay. And you guys were on the Freedom of Information. The House Bill 19. Yeah. That was out right now. The prime sponsor, I believe, worked closely with the subcommittee. Maybe we can just have Mike. Sure. Or you can just sit where Lathine.
Okay, here. Yeah, sure. So, Mr. Chairman, I can outline the differences in the original bill and the committee substitute proposed for your consideration. The first change is on page 1, line 18. It would be the second Tuesday in April, and that was accommodated primarily to accommodate the two national convention, or not the two parties. Because if we had it late in May, you've got a problem in that if the parties have their state conventions, they'd be naming their people to be delegates and representatives, delegates committed, and yet they couldn't name them because they wouldn't know who the national choice is going to be. And there are some people that, for instance, if a guy was a strong Carter fan, he wouldn't want to go back there assigned to be a committed delegate for, you know, Magnuson or something like that. So it was considered necessary to move the thing into April, which seemed to meet with the approval of both parties. And Mr. Kelly, I think, is circulating this among Republican Party people too. And my understanding is that this is fine with fine with them too. So that's the first significant change is that date. Nothing's changed. The lieutenant governor is still the guy that places the candidates' names on the ballot. Having decided that the 2nd April is the appropriate date, that sort of then set the next date problems. This, I mean, that's more or less established what they would be. On line 2 or line 7, page 2, the lieutenant governor may not place a candidate's name on the ballot, nor may a petition be presented to the lieutenant governor after the first Tuesday in March. That moves it back so that there's, I think it's 6 weeks in there intervening. A little bit later on, there's one other date that's again dictated by the second Tuesday in April thing, and that's the date in line 19 on page 2, the second Tuesday in March, for a withdrawal of candidacy. One change we made was that a petition would require 1,000 qualified voters. That's to be consistent with the other nominating petition things in the statutes now. Yeah, otherwise. Nothing's changed, I don't think, at least significantly on the delegates thing. The procedures for the preferential primary elections. Well, on page 3, section B, which starts line 1, it gives you the what appears to be a rather confusing formula. And the drafting attorneys upstairs recognize it as being confusing, but it's just about as clear as it can be. However, in order to take that confusing language and reduce it to English, the drafting attorney did something so logical that could set a whole new precedent in state government. Of course, it's probably unconstitutional, but I'm just joking about that. But he gave an illustration, which I don't think has ever been done in statutes before, but I think it's just a great idea, and there's nothing wrong with it. But section 3 down here, at the bottom of page 3, takes a hypothetical election with 200,000 votes, and assigns, you know, how those votes would be cast, and then using the formula up the top of the page up there, through this example, you can see exactly how the formula works. And God, I think that's the greatest idea since Driver was old. So it's really fantastic to have an actual illustration in the in the bill. Vibram Souls. Okay. Or whatever. Chocolate ice cream, whatever turns us off.
See, those are urban. Yeah. Things that don't know about them.
What's in your camera?
That, I think, is constitutes most of the, in fact, all of the changes, other than the fact that some other phraseology was necessary in the process, but it pretty well lines it out. I feel like it's it is a single ballot thing. And of course, nobody has to belong to that party to still what you would call, I guess, an open ballot, or because you'll just be assigned a ballot. You can go if you decide you want to vote for the Democratic nominee.
terms of it addressing, if we accepted this, that this was going to be in our local or state primaries too, you know.
No, different day, different election.
It's a special one that comes up, what, second Tuesday in April every 4 years. And really, from a practical standpoint, from the Democratic number in 1980, I think the next one's in 80 as opposed to 82, right? That, well, who knows if Carter will show up here.
Well, let me hear Mike tell us why, you know, my argument, just looking at the top, still hasn't changed that much, perhaps in some, as far as letting the people decide whether they want a preferential presidential primary. What are some of the objections to letting the people decide whether they want it or not?
Can only be one, and that's just the cost of the cost of printing that, you know, putting that up.
The cost of putting one more proposition on
which isn't much of an expense. You know, here's the only, here would be my argument that I feel that that I don't personally have any problem in interpreting or speaking for my constituents, because I think it's overwhelming. I don't think it's a close question at all whether they'd go for this or not. You know, generally this is applied where it's somewhat of a close question or a moral question. Horse racing, something like that. Al Osi's pari-mutuel betting, you know, or something like that. That maybe, but I, a close question or a moral question. I wouldn't feel that I was, I don't think it's a close question in my district. I haven't polled or anything, but I don't think you'd find hardly anybody saying, heck no, we can't vote directly for the nominee. You know, I think the immediate response would, I think it'd be overwhelming.
I think you're right. That's exactly what we wanted on the ballot.
Just note.
There's two responses to this. Number one, I agree with exactly what you said. I think my sense of the public is that we don't need to take a poll on that. People elected us to make decisions, particularly in the areas where we think we recognize the overwhelming sentiment. And gosh, I have yet to find the first person to say they don't like this idea. It's a complete mystery to me why it hasn't happened before, because this is one of the few bills that I've introduced. It's, every comment I've gotten has been positive. Number two, I also agree with you that we're not under obligation to put everything before the people. I mean, they elect us, and if we make the wrong decision, they'll let us know the hard way. But I think, unless it is a moral question, then definitely we should bite the bullet and say, yeah, you know, I'm your elected representative, and I think this is the way to go. Number three, though, I think the people are going to have a chance to decide this in a poll sense, in that the first time it happens, the second Tuesday in April, we'll find out what the people think. If only a handful of people show up at the polls, we may decide that was the biggest, you know, waste of state funds in the history of the state, and thanks but no thanks, we're not going to do it again, and we'll take it off the books. But I think that there's no question in my mind that that's not going to happen. I think it's particularly if we get some candidates or candidate stand-ins. I don't know that we're going to get President Carter up here, 4 years from now. But I wouldn't be a bit surprised to see the Vice President Mondale up here or some of the other chief lieutenants. I don't know who the Republican nominee will be. I will be a little bit surprised maybe if the Republican nominee comes up other than maybe to Anchorage for one day. But I'll be equally surprised if we don't get some strong, you know, chief lieutenants and maybe a vice presidential Republican nominee up here, and in more areas than just Anchorage, because that's what this presidential primary sweepstakes thing builds in. It's, and I guess I'm getting off the subject now and going to sales pitch on the bill. But in any case, I think given all of that, the sweepstakes enthusiasm that's generated, I don't think there's any doubt that we're going to get a good turnout of voters, and I think people are going to appreciate, the opportunity to help pick their president. And I just don't see that we need to, have them go to one extra election 2 years from now in order to do this thing 4 years from now. I think we'll get the effective election when they do it the first time.
Mr. Kelly, then.
Number one, we're not going to an extra election. This is simply a few more dots of ink on an already existing ballot that's going to be printed up anyway, so by taking it to the people, it's not going to cost us any more money. Number two, you're wondering why it hasn't been done before, and the reason is obvious, the $274,000. Up until 1970,
Alaska didn't have $274,000 they could just throw around like it didn't mean anything, and that's exactly what we're doing on this. $274,000 does mean something, and I'm not willing to go ahead with it unless the people in the state of Alaska indicate to me that they want to spend $274,000 for a presidential primary.
Bill.
Mr.
Chairman, you know, there are, how many other states have preferential?
I'm sorry, I always look it up and I always forget it. That's 20 yeah, something, I think. But
yeah, and I think the people of Alaska should have that right to indicate their preference. There's no question in my mind. $274,000 is what, $65,000, $70,000 a year, if you're talking about an annual basis. And to have that right, like Representative Miller says, if they decide they don't want that right, well, fine. But hell, they ought to be given that that opportunity to show their preference.
Allows them the opportunity to show their preference and what they, if they want it or not. All they have to do is vote yes or no in 1978.
Your argument can be presented with any bill having fiscal impact. We could have put the idea to run 15,000 on the ballot. We could have put any bill that appropriates any money onto the ballot to see if the people want to spend it.
Joe, don't you think, though, we're addressing a thing a little different than the average bill when we start messing with people's votes and how they want to do this? That's a pretty delicate area. It's not just like any other bill, I think.
Not if we're giving them an extra right to vote. It's not like we're taking away a right of theirs to vote. We're giving them an extra right, and I think it's something that...
What we're saying to the parties is you can't decide how your delegate's going to cast their vote for president.
I kind of like that aspect. Huh? Is your objection the money?
He wants a sign-off. I mean, I'm not trying to cheapen it or anything, but I mean, basically, you just want to sign off on the $273,000.
No, it goes a little further than that. You know, that's the obvious hook you can catch something on. You know, but I really think that in this situation, that there's no reason, given as if this thing won't go into effect until 4 years from now, there's absolutely no reason in the world why the people in the state of Alaska should not decide upon this. It's not something that's going to take effect immediately or even take effect next year. It's not going to take effect until 1980. You know?
Mm-hmm. Now let me hear another
perfect
just
example.
Real quick about how would it affect this, Mike, if everybody's so sure that people want it? What would it affect it if you put a little paragraph on the ballot?
Well, it wouldn't affect it, I don't think, from a practical point of view. I think it'd pass, 80-90% or more. In fact, it might be... It might approximate our pay
sure.
raise.
We may end up with a ballot about that law, though, at the rate we're going.
I heard some comments that maybe. Mostly around the fiscal.
Yeah, Mike?
Mostly from party people, probably.
I have yet to get my first negative comment, although I'm sure that, you know, given any issue, you'll find at least somebody will be against it. But I just get back to saying we're elected by the people to make decisions. And I just frankly don't like to pass the buck, unless it's some, like you say, a moral issue. Then, you know, if we were instituting capital punishment or something like that,
marijuana.
Yeah, sure.
They want to go to the people.
We're rescinding the capital move.
Yeah, right. Perfect example. But hey, if you'll join me in putting that one back on the ballot next time, we'll draw up the legislation. I'll concede and go along with you on this one. How about it?
I'll leave that one alone.
Kelly and Miller, great co-sponsors.
Yeah, got
the two bills together. Yeah.
As a writer,
Bill, what was your feeling about putting it on the ballot? Think it's unnecessary?
I think it's unnecessary. Yeah, I think it's unnecessary.
You're putting it on the ballot, or is it just that you think it's unnecessary?
No, I think this is, we have to make some decisions once in a while. If it was a major item where we were either detracting from somebody's rights, or it was like the chairman mentioned, a moral obligation very close. Then it should go on the ballot. Strongly favor taking things that
I forget how you vote on, but let's take Lisa's bill where we get into close primary elections in the state. Mm-hmm. don't we get into that question there of,
we may,
of whether we're getting into telling people what they can do with their vote?
Yeah, we may get into that, but that's, you know, that's a separate thing. Here, we're giving them, you know, an extra chance to allow, or an extra chance to make a choice. And thereby locking in through the delegate selection the people's choice as to who the delegates will be voting for.
Ms. Mackey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Borrowing a word to use on occasion, you know, doesn't this get into the great cosmic the great cosmic thing called democracy? I mean, you know, the fact that we are not a true democracy, we're a delegated democracy, you know? And if we wanted to go into a total and full democracy, we'd let the people make every decision possible.
You're right, absolutely right, Al. Here I find myself defending a democratic position on this.
No, and I'm saying we are not a true democracy, and doggone, let's just get on with it and start making decisions, because we can't bring everything to the people all the time.
Well, what's all these goddamn meetings all over the country and all this forum?
This vote, you know, the voting that we do. You know.
Well, we're a representative democracy.
Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. Let's do it.
Okay, question. All those in favor of the amendment, raise your right hand. All those opposed, same sign.
You're not voting today,
yet? He said I could vote.
And the chair recognizes abstentions in this case.
Hey, you know, I voted with Kelly on that. I'm in favor of the amendment.
Okay.
I don't know.
The record will so reflect.
I thought after the argument that would be
clear. Nobody thinks that.
Where does this dude go? He was pre-filed. Does he go to Judiciary, Mike?
I think it does, but I'm not sure.
You will see this amendment.
Or maybe it doesn't.
I don't know. It probably does go to Judiciary. This is old, and they were still doing two referrals. I'll bet it.
Again.
I'll bet it does.
Where does...
Oh, we voted on with the amendment, wasn't it?
Yeah. Where does...
Yeah, yeah, we just voted on the amendment.
Where does this great cosmic action take us now?
I mean...
Well, a motion to pass the bill out?
Can we have a caucus or something for a minute?
Sure. We'll have a 2-minute recess. Yeah, you can use the office.
No. We don't trust the office.
Here's my
desk. Okay.
Okay. We signed.
Yeah.
We'll just have the draft, work draft.
Thank you.
We can pass it out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
I want to bet 5 cents on how you guys are going to sign it.
I'm going to vote for the bill as long as with recommendation for amendment.
Well, we're not going to have an official.
I want my bet.
Oh. I'll sign it like Dick Lassen, but it sounds reasonable.
Actually, we're just about to come along down the path a number of days. I'm going to have to stand up one of these days and make, you know, speech 37. The majority of the always has to make, starting people, asking people to put, you know, the four things: do pass if amended, do not pass unless amended, or do not pass. That's going to be the four lists.
Let's start scratching that and get some of the screen.
Yeah. Well, you're going to have one now.
I personally like it. I would like to let you meet the will and some of the things. So, at the point, I like the bill.
Need me any more?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You did good.
Done your damage, right?
Yep. Thank you. The people, thank you.
Here, let's hear it. Huh? Oh, you found my amendment?
I guess you're getting mixed reactions. Mixed band.
I'm going to pull back on that. Cotton has looked at me balefully for the past 2 days. I don't have the heart.
Yeah. But rather than having the sort of outburst that you did, most of us just sort of shake our heads.
Well, doesn't anybody like it?
There hasn't been one.
I think it's funny.
I'm gonna move that we insert it.
Hey, Ed, you second, I'll vote for it. Come on, Bill. Joe?
I'll withdraw my vote.
Why not?
No, it's been inserted.
Where?
What is the minimum?
Here.
Well, I have that.
Did you read it?
Okay, let's take up 188. And
Ed, did you and Parr get together on that amendment? On that language, remember from our
I just left it up to him. He said, no, I'll draw it up. I said, fine, I had no argument with it.
Okay.
So he turns in an amendment, I'll look at.
Okay.
I have a problem with the whole bill, but
okay.
That's what we agreed to.
Can you and
the party initiates
Dave get together to look at what Charlie drew up?
It's one of the other.
Yeah, okay.
So that we can get it out of the committee.
Okay, yeah, that'll we'll bring up the coffee fund.
Oh, we need more money?
Yeah, but before we do that, let's get this out of the way. And I won't offer this. Anybody give me
your... Would you sign a copy for me so I'll have it for my memoirs?
Carpenter's book.
How many people would like to see this amendment just in a state affairs bill, just by itself? Anybody? Nobody? Thanks a lot.
I'll support you on that. I'd like to see it in the bill. I didn't say vote for it.
You like that as a matter of record.
Okay, let's, on 188, let's refer to this memo, and this was the suggested language. Section 1, Parent B, was the quantifying language supported by Patty Ann Polly, and the sponsor is not in support of it. The administration asked for its inclusion. I'm talking about the memo.
Oh,
as it affects House Bill 188.
Cotton is not in favor of it.
Yeah, the sponsor is not in favor of it. And the administration asked for it.
Did he give a rationale? Did he give a reason for him supporting it?
Yeah, I think his position was simply that five is a good number, and that I think that he's concerned about them cutting back on the registration officials, sort of arbitrarily cutting back. He thinks five is justifiable. And there's no reason to have less than five under any circumstance.
You can't find five. That's a circumstance.
I suppose under that circumstance. But I mean, beyond
what he argued. You can find temporary registrants.
He can fill, he can
sure
plug
you can
in.
Find easy. Find a lot of them. You know, for a short campaign, you know, short push for registration,
yeah, I know,
for a campaign.
I know.
You can find people.
I don't know what time it is. I know you can find.
Okay.
So does the chair have a position in reference
to the
prime sponsor?
No. Yeah, I'm personally supporting the prime sponsor's position.
So the bill.
But I just wanted to put it up. If anybody else wanted to move it, then we'll certainly consider it. I wasn't gonna.
Yeah, move something, would you?
Wasn't gonna move it.
We don't want to say what.
Okay, then going on to section two.
It's academic, really.
I was interested in line 18 is changing the may to shall, right after governor may, going to have lieutenant governor shall upon request of a majority political party or receipt of a petition
that way it can be generated, you know, the party can ask for it, or it can be generated by 5% of the registered voters in the precinct, and then the appointment.
Well, in their version, they have shall.
Yeah, right. That's right. It changes shall. In the existing bill, it's may, and so that's changed to shall. And then there's another keying element in there that would allow, in the case an independent was running 150 days prior to the, the independent, in Kelly and my case, Ditlefson, could have gone around and got, let's say, they didn't want to appoint temporary registrars. He wanted to get people registered, and in that process, hustle for him. He or his supporters could go around through the precincts, get 5% of the valid registered voters on there, and then they'd be allowed to kick in temporary registrars.
Do you want a nickel?
Sure. Yeah, I would.
Well, how do you get into this number two up there under B, the request for appointment made by a major political party?
Well, major political party is that party that was on the ballot before, and then I guess one of the officers.
Maybe the Jeffersonians or?
No.
No,
they were not on the ballot. That's the problem. so it'd be an officer of the South Central Republican District or the state chairman. Something like that. I guess for a statewide request. It come from the state, or district request would come from the district.
Is there, we've gone over this particular thing before, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is there strong sentiment for or against it as written up, absent the comments from Baldwin?
Yes, I've got strong sentiment.
Well, can you elucidate that?
Would you like me to elucidate my strong sentiment?
Yeah.
Okay.
By leave of the chair.
Oh, sure.
One of the real problems we have in the state of Alaska is people is transits coming in and out. And I think everybody will agree that Alaska is probably the most transit state in the union. And I think it's unfair for transits and people in construction camps, people just passing through, people up here for 90 days, this, that, and the other thing, to be voting. Not necessarily unfair, perhaps, but I don't think it's in the best interest of the state of Alaska for these transients to be voting on issues that affect the state of Alaska and those of us that are going to be remaining here. I heard a similar argument over the Capitol movement not too long ago. The argument was, in effect, that the construction camps cost them the Capitol. I don't know if there's any truth in it. I do have a problem with this, and I think to have a bunch of registration officials running around for partisan political purposes, and that's what we're talking about, registering anybody that they get their hands on, and not caring about their background, not caring about how long they've been here, how long they're going to stay, not caring about their motive, I think is a big mistake to the state of Alaska. I'm going to oppose the bill.
Well, that's, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. McKinney.
That's the exact system we have now. What we have now are the unions running registrars to all the construction camps because they have access to registrars now anyway. What you have is people setting up in shopping centers where they get anybody who happens to be passing through the shopping center. And what we're talking about doing is putting people out into neighborhoods where you get people who are, who are actually living in a location.
You're talking about expanding is what you're talking about.
I can see who this kind of funds a job for a bunch of people out there that I'm thinking of. That, it isn't fair for me to deny them that point, but because they may not be representing the party I want to represent. But what did you find wrong with these recommendations? Is 5 too many for a place of 250 people?
That an awful lot? That's what Patty Ann, or whatever her name, Polly Ann.
Yep. This request here that she put in, what did you find objectionable with that, Mr. Chairman? You said the cotton didn't like it. What his objections were, or even he wanted five, even if there was 250 people, or if there was 50 people, or 100 people, you still had five.
He thought five was a reasonable minimum.
Yeah, reasonable minimum. Yeah, that's 10 under any circumstances. 250 and above.
That's 10, isn't it? 10 restaurants. For 250 people.
What?
There'll be five of each party. That seems like to me her point here at least made some sense as far as cost and everything.
Well, there was no cost figure.
They just generate the cost by inaction. They get 50. They get 50 cents per registration, and they don't generate any cost unless they generate business, which is. That's set up real good because.
I see your point. But number three there, what place you get to five for anything over 1,000? What place would that not include? Maybe some villages or something, but you may not want 10. I don't think you could find five Republicans, and you may not find five Republicans.
No, you don't have to have some five.
Yeah, you do.
To maximum five. Make shall. Well, the request has to be made.